3:30 left, opening quarter. Late bounce to Roy. Roy against Howard, left to the key. That's where he likes to operate. Brandon gets a pick from Prisvilla. Down the lane, toss to Blake near corner. Blake 7 to shoot. Wasn't expecting the pass, now turns on Kidd. Down the lane, and put it up, no. Prisvilla trying to tap, no. And Dampier the rebound, and Prisvilla is hurt. Oh, my.
All right, Trailblazer fans, as if you needed any more reminder of what happened last night, that was Brian Wheeler's call of the most unfortunate Drove Prisvilla injury that he suffered last night in Dallas. You are listening to the Trailblazers.com podcast. As always, a day earlier in, we actually have, New Year's Eve off, which I did not know, or Christmas Eve off, which I didn't know last week. So, Dave was kind enough to bump it up an extra day, and I should also introduce Dave. Dave Deckert, BlazersEdge.com, is on the other end of the phone. Dave, you feeling healthy today?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm just missing the days when the only thing that made the Blazers pound the floor in pain was John Canzano's writing. I mean, we're in the other side of the looking glass here, and there's nothing you can do.
Absolutely. As Brian Wheeler eloquently put there, Joel Prisvilla, ruptured right patella tendon, some other patella damage. He is, I mean, no official word yet, but I would imagine he will probably be out for the season. Hopefully not any longer than that. It's a fairly significant injury from what I can glean, and Joel bringing a 10-year veteran, hopefully this is something he can overcome. But at this point, the biggest concern is whether or not the team can overcome it. They obviously got a win last night in Dallas, which is, I mean, a really great win for this team. Their first win in Dallas in the last 11 tries. So from that respect, you know, it was a very nice game. But obviously, the long-term effects of losing Joel Prisvilla, maybe, you know, arguably the one guy aside from Brandon Roy that you really couldn't lose, going down last night. And you know, now it's really a matter of, one, getting enough guys out on the floor to actually field a team, and two, trying to figure out how you kind of go on from this now that you basically don't have any depth at the center position whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and as always, you don't see the effects right away because there's an energy rush. You know, it's kind of like when an accident happens or something, that you're in shock for a little while thereafter, and you've got lots of energy and you're walking around like nothing happened, and then it hits you and then you really go down hard. For the Blazers, I mean, it's the next, you know, the last game, the next couple games, you might not see it, but I was already worried about February, March, that kind of thing, and now I'm even more worried that the league is just going to catch up to the Blazers having no interior defenders, and every game is going to be just an incredible battle to win. You know, that said, they're still winning. They're 2-1 on this road trip with all the injuries they've already had, so I mean, you can't count them out entirely, but I just feel for them how tough it's going to be.
Yeah, obviously I feel for the team, and, you know, I really feel for Joel Prisvilla. He had been pretty healthy pretty much for the past couple seasons, no real serious injuries to speak of, and then, you know, this kind of freak accident happened, and that's basically the end of his season. And, you know, he had a player option at the end of this season, in which he was probably, you know, I mean, maybe he was going to pick it up, maybe he wasn't. Either way, he was probably in line to probably make a few extra bucks than he was going to be making otherwise. Now that opportunity is probably gone by the wayside. So, but really more than financials, anything else. I mean, Joel's such a great guy and really just such a, you know, the heart and soul of this team, that seeing him go down is, you know, it's just, I mean, I guess I'm probably a little desensitized at this point to all these kind of these injuries, but I don't know. There's something about Joel going down that's, you know, he's kind of the everyman, and I don't know, when you see him go down, it's like, you know, that's someone that I can, you know, I don't have freakish athletic ability like Greg Oden or Travis Outlaw or Nicholas Batum, but, you know, I'm an everyday Joe, you know, and that's kind of how I see Joel Prisvilla. And, you know, to see him go down, it's almost kind of like not seeing yourself go down, but someone that, you know, you could identify with taking a dive, and that's, you know, it's tough to see. Heart goes out to Joel. Hopefully he's able to pull through this.
Joel's like your best friend on the team. I mean, not literally yours, but I mean, the analogy is you lose a bunch of people and you break up with your girlfriend, you do whatever, and life really sucks right now, but at least you got your buddy, and you know he's always going to be there for you. And when Joe went down, it was like, oh, man, you know, my best friend, too, the guy I depend on, now he's gone. And you look at this team, and even though they have Brandon and LaMarcus still, which makes any team viable, you're just aghast. I mean, most teams in the league would love to start our injured list right now.
Yeah, we have an injured list. Yeah, absolutely. They could play in this league right now, you know, and that's really, I mean, that says a lot about, you know, the way this team is constructed and how much talent we had stockpiled, and it also says probably more about how many guys we've had go down. And at this point, you know, as Nate McMillan said last night, you know, you hold your breath when you're even taking the court now, because there's basically a 50-50 shot that someone's going to get injured in a game, you know, just doing something they'd regularly do. So, but I guess, you know, there's no point in harping on this too much, I guess, other than to say, you know, it's bad luck. And, you know, I don't really know that there's anything. Joel's injury, obviously, there's nothing that could have been done to prevent that. I mean, that's just, you know, a case where you come down wrong and, you know, and that's that. And so, but, I mean, as far as what the team does now, you know, Dave, I'd like to get your opinion on this especially. Do you think it's an issue where you maybe look to make some trades to pick some guys up, or do you just kind of maybe make a few pickups from the D-League or from free agents with whatever exception the team might be granted and just play out the string like that? I mean, I'm kind of two minds about it. One, you know, I mean, at this point, this team has suffered so many injuries that it's probably a stretch to assume that they could do anything in the postseason. So why, you know, lose resources trying to chase that? But on the other hand, I mean, there's still a lot of season to be played, and you just don't want to give up on the season only a third of the way through.
First question to ask is, who would you trade? I mean, you have extra point guards somewhere. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody believes that Miller, Blake, and Bayless are going to continue on this team for years immemorial. But that's about the only resource you have. I guess Miller might draw something. Blake, I think his trade value is just in his contract right now. Jared Bayless, you might be able to trade, but I mean, you're starting to lose a lot of talent already. I mean, you've lost a ton of scoring. You're down to bare bones there. If you trade Bayless, you better get somebody who can put the ball in the bucket back. And, you know, at that salary, I mean, who are you going to get at Bayless's salary that's going to be better than Jared? You know, I think the possibilities are pretty limited there. Also, I think, you know, you just made a salient point that what are you doing this for? You're doing this for three more wins, four more wins, okay. But you don't make a trade that you weren't going to make anyway to get three or four more wins in this season. It just, you know, you kind of write it off. You go with whatever happens. You play as hard as you can, hope things bounce for you instead of against you for a change, and you just write it out. I don't believe in ever dealing from a position of weakness like this.
Absolutely, and that is exactly how, you know, 29 other GMs would look at trading with the Trailblazers right now. They know we're hurting, and they know that, you know, if they're going to offer up a deal, that they're definitely going to get some, try to serve up something that's not really fair in terms of talent, just because, yeah, we don't hold any cards right now. I mean, we've got some talent that we have stockpiled, but half of it's injured, and the other half is, you know, like you said, not paid enough to really bring you back anything other than someone else on a rookie contract. So,
or untradeable. Roy and Aldridge, you don't trade. I mean, who have you got healthy that you could trade? Juwan Howard, Martell Webster, Andre Miller, Steve Blake, Jared Bayless. That's it. Well, I mean, Dante Cunningham, but he's not making, you know, Cunningham, Pendergraph, whatever, aren't going to draw a ton of interest. So, I mean, you got five players that you could potentially trade. You take Howard out of that equation because he's not going to draw flies. And now you're down to four, the three-point guards and Martell. Martell's also your only small forward, by the way. So, I mean, your options, you're narrowed down to such a small window that you could get through that I don't see a trade really being practical at this point.
Yeah, I pretty much agree there. I know that the kind of the knee-jerk reaction when a player goes down is like, well, you know, what are we going to do to replace that player? We need to go out and make a trade. But, I mean, when you kind of look at the scenario in its totality, it really just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And like you said, I mean, Of all those names who might draw interest, I would say that, you know, Bayless and Martell are probably the two guys that you know, are maybe the most likely. But, yeah, if you trade Martell, you have to bring back another small forward along with whatever big man you're trying to get, because then you have no one playing that position. And, you know, if you trade Bayless, you know, you maybe end up regretting it now that we're actually seeing some growth from him, especially for a short-term, you know, move that like you said, maybe get you three or four more wins, if that. And I think even that is probably being generous. So at this point, just doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Never get a big man for that package that's any good. So, I mean, what you could hope would be Bayless and Webster for some kind of scoring small forward or some guy, you know, like the salaries don't match, I don't think, like, you know, but a Gerald Wallace type. If you could make that deal, you might think about it just to give you more pop this year, and because, it, you know, that could have benefits in the future. But, you know, you would have made that deal anyway, probably, if you were going to make it. So it's not like it's relating to this injury. So, you know, there's nothing that this injury does to trade the change the trade situation other than making it even less likely that we'll be able to make one, because you take one more possible trade piece out of the equation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, since we're kind of talking about personnel right now, it seems like a good chance to fulfill some of the requests that Dave had on Blazers Edge to kind of go down the roster and kind of give an idea of, you know, who's here to stay, who's maybe not, what's their kind of long-term value to the team. So, I mean, obviously, I guess it makes sense to start out with the guys that you know basically what the answers are right away, which is Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge. Well, let's keep them separate, actually. Brandon Roy first. My opinion, obviously, he's not going anywhere. I mean, he's the guy who they have built the franchise around, especially now with Greg out again. I think at this point you really have to realize, if you hadn't already, that this is and will continue to be Brandon Roy's team for the foreseeable future. He's not going anywhere. He's incredibly important to the success of the franchise, especially now. Not sure how much longer he can continue to play 40 minutes a night, but he's doing a lot with those minutes right now. And I mean, he's a guy who, you know, if something were to happen to him, you might as well just board up the windows and kind of come back and deal with it when training camps comes around, because he's really the best thing this team has going.
Yep, no disagreement there. I mean, that says it all. He's not. Brandon's going to be the heart of this team for as long as we can foresee.
Then kind of going on to Aldridge, LaMarcus Aldridge also recently signed a contract extension, reportedly not to the extent of Brandon Roy's, but still a hefty chunk of change. Again, a guy who, you know, I don't think there's really any likelihood that he's going anywhere anytime soon either, unless, you know, someone comes in with an offer that blows your doors off, or for some reason, if LaMarcus were to become disgruntled for some strange reason, which doesn't really seem like, especially now that, with all the injuries, I mean, this basically becomes, you know, kind of a two-man game. Team goes back to playing pretty much like they played last year. Maybe, I mean, at this point, you probably have to consider you got to play a little faster than you did last year, but still a lot of pick and rolls. Still LaMarcus getting a lot of touches. So I'd say, you know, slightly less. I mean, where Brandon Roy is at 99.9, I would say that LaMarcus Aldridge is probably a 95% in regards to his future with the team. In regards to his importance, too, he's probably more important than Brandon Roy, just from a respect that you know pretty much what you're going to get from Brandon, and I don't think you could really say that about LaMarcus just yet. And for this team to have any kind of success as currently constructed, you need to have LaMarcus be a consistent performer in the post and on defense, really. And so when it comes to importance to the team, he's right there. Now, if that consistency doesn't come around, then maybe you start to look elsewhere. But I think it's probably too soon to say that. And I think probably a 95% chance that LaMarcus is with this team for the long haul, and 95% his importance to the team, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Sure. You know, here you start getting into chemistry issues, which is one of the big puzzles that the team will have to solve. I believe talent-wise and skill-wise, LaMarcus will fit. We already saw some issues perhaps earlier, you know, fitting in with Odin, and LaMarcus was at the crux of that. You get a 6-shot, 1-rebound night in Orlando. You know, things haven't been smooth for LaMarcus this year, and the changes around the team aren't necessarily doing his game a ton of good. So you have to ask, you know, at what point will they be able to work that out? As long as they can get, you know, a reasonable solution, I'd say, yeah, LaMarcus is certainly here. But if there's going to be one of the big three to go, he's going to be the one, and he'll certainly have huge value somewhere. Yeah, I'd say probably they're going to work it out. But it just makes me itch. I just get the feeling that somewhere down the line here, we're going to see LaMarcus getting frustrated. Obviously not going to happen this year now, because hard to be frustrated when you're the only guy in the front court. But down the road, I think there's battles yet to be had there internally.
Absolutely, and one of those battles, as you mentioned, regarding Greg Oden, and it's hard to tell how much credence to give to any of that discussion about, you know, chemistry issues and guys worrying about shots. But reportedly there was some concern among Brandon and LaMarcus about playing with Greg and how to kind of best fit in with Greg's game. Obviously another season lost to injury for Greg. Hopefully comes back next year and is able to do, you know, some of the things we saw him start to do this year. If you'd asked me this question, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago before his injury, I would say that, you know, after Brandon, he's probably the most indispensable and most unlikely person on this roster to not be here long into the future. But now with the injury, I still think he's got, you know, a future with his team, if for no other reason than I think that this team probably has more faith in Greg than any other team in the NBA would. But his... I think maybe you have to consider that his importance to this team or the amount that this team can rely on Greg at this point has definitely been knocked down a little bit after this second fairly significant injury. So while I don't think he's going anywhere, I would have to consider that his, you know, the idea of building around Greg is probably, or I won't say probably, but at least in my opinion, maybe not as strong as it once was.
Yeah, well, as far as being with the team, one of two things is going to happen. Either he'll continue to be chronically injured and you won't be able to move him, or he'll not and he'll be incredibly valuable to the Blazers. So I think Greg Oden is going to be here for a long, long time. It's just a matter of what that's going to look like. His value to Portland is immense. I mean, he's the perfect fit for this roster as constructed, and that's simply not going to happen anywhere else. I mean, you hear other announcers around League Pass and stuff talk about, well, he's good, he may be borderline all-star level, but he's never going to be that, you know, superstar center. They just don't get it, that's not what Portland needs, that he's a superstar in everything the Blazers want him to be and are going to need him to be a superstar in, which is why he should be here. And that, of course, means that it's going to be devilishly tricky to get enough value back for him to this team in order to justify a trade. So Oden, I think, is a lock to be here for as long as we can see.
Another guy who I think is at least obviously a lock to be here next year, given recent events, is Joel Prisbilla. I mean, I think that coming off this injury and having to work his way back onto the court, once again, I think that, you know, it'll be a situation where the Trailblazers will believe in Joel Prisbilla, whereas a lot of other teams after injury this significant might not. Also, it's obviously hard to be traded, at least in the short term, when you have such an injury like Joel sustained last night. Long term, I think it really depends on where, you know, his health is after this injury. I think if he can come back to kind of, I mean, well, that's the thing about Joel. The things that Joel does, you know, you don't have to be ultra athletic to do. You know, I mean, he rebounds and gets garbage buckets and plays solid defense. And you know, if I don't know what the kind of the typical rehabilitation or comeback from that kind of injury is, but I mean, I think if he can get back to anywhere near where he was before the injury, I think he still becomes a piece that you keep around for, you know, a decent price, maybe what he's making now or maybe a little bit less. But I still think it's a guy that, you know, you keep around your team, and especially, you know, with the injury problems that Greg has had as well, having that backup center who can actually play is incredibly valuable, and I think that's Joel Prisbilla to a T. So my guess would be that Joel is another guy who, more likely than not, if and when he does come back from injury, is a guy who probably, you know, I think there's a decent likelihood that he ends up playing out his career in Portland.
Yeah, the unspoken silver lining here is that Joel's injury will probably give the Blazers another year to make that decision, which, by the way, they needed with Greg Oden going down. The scary thing at the end of this year would be Prisbilla opts out, and the Blazers have to make a decision whether or not to pay him, not knowing where Greg's future is. And maybe, just maybe, this causes Joel not to opt out. He just takes his money and you know, figures next year he'll get his chance. And that's actually good for the Blazers. So, I mean, you'd never want Joel to go down, but in terms of the contract situation, probably helps.
Yeah, and I would say about Joel, too, that Joel is a guy who would like to start. I mean, you know, he'll never say it, you know, and he's always going to be ready to go in off the bench. But, I mean, everyone in this league wants to start. And if, you know, Joel were given an opportunity where he could start somewhere else, you know, I think he'd probably look at that pretty hard. Whether or not that's a reality or not, you know, it's impossible to say. But, you know, I don't think necessarily that just money would be motivating Joel's decision anyways. I think, you know, he's getting to the point in his career where, you know, he wants to win, and he wants to win now, and he'd like to do that as a starter. So if that opportunity is available at even money, you know, you never know. I think that's kind of the one wild card in the situation when you're talking about Joel, obviously, and his ability to come back from this injury being the other. So moving on down the list here, I don't know if I really have any kind of rhyme or reason to the ways I'm picking these. I just kind of wrote these down, and I tried to clump together guys by position. So we'll just go on to the point guards next, since we've got a whole bunch of them, I guess is the easy way to put it. Steve Blake, reading reports out there, who knows if they're true, about, you know, Steve possibly being available. I think that Steve is one of the first guys, you know, coming in, because he is also in a contract year. He's one of the first guys I think that we get to on this list where you say, you know, there's maybe a decent chance that you know, he's not in the long-term plans of the Portland Trail Blazers. Now, once again, I'm speaking from just a purely hypothetical here. I have no information one way or the other. But, you know, with his contract being up, and with there being so many point guards on this team, and with, you know, with Andre Miller just having been signed for at least 2 years, you know, most likely 3 years, you know, it kind of muddies up the waters when it comes to Steve's future with the team. And also you add in the improved play of Jared Bayless, who, I mean, let's be honest, isn't really a point guard right now, but at least, you know, kind of plays in that position. And the fact that, you know, they ended up burning a roster spot on Patty Mills simply because they like, you know, his potential. You know, all those things factored in, you kind of look at, you know, maybe someone has to be the odd man out eventually. And I don't know necessarily that it will be Steve Blake. And Blake's a guy who, you know, personally, I would never count out, because he always, you know, proves people wrong. But, you know, he's, like I said, he's the first guy on this list where, you know, it's not as easy to say, yes, he's going to be here for the long haul.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Steve's gone. I mean, it's just that his contract situation kind of, you know, speaks to it. The Blazers aren't going to necessarily want to commit to him long-term, I don't think. I don't think there's a reason to commit to him long-term right now. He's seeing a lot of run in the three-guard lineup, obviously, because of injuries, but I don't foresee a time when the Blazers go to him as the main point guard. And if you're going to talk about three guards, then, you know, other than some smart defense, not necessarily athletic defense, but smart defense, what does Steve give you that Rudy Fernandez doesn't? And I think that the downgrade in whatever Rudy does worse than Steve is not as steep as the upgrade to things that Rudy can do better than Steve, and I think Rudy could probably acclimate to that role if that's what they're going to do. So, you know, I think Steve, it's been a good run. Probably this year is the last year for him as a Blazer.
Now, I mean, he is playing a lot of fourth quarter minutes still, so, I mean, he's obviously still a pretty important part of this team.
Well, obviously. But, I mean, part of that is injury, and part of that is brain power. And this team better get some collective brain power upgrades. Otherwise, you know, if you need Steve in the fourth quarter, you're kind of in trouble, I guess is what I'm trying to say, if you're going to be a legitimate deep playoff team. And that's not a knock on Steve. I'm just saying the things that he really gives this team in spades are things that other people should be able to start picking up. And if they don't, Steve's not going to make enough difference to make up for that anyway.
Sure. Moving on down the list here to the newest point guard. Well, I guess, does he count as the newest? Yeah, I guess, well, I don't know. Andre Miller, either way. Newer point guard on the team. Obviously, a two-year deal. Like I said, 3 years possible. You know, I think Andre is probably here for, you know, for at least the next 3 years. I think he's enough of a talent, and I think he's kind of shown enough in the starting role that, you know, he really becomes your starting point guard, given that, you know, assuming at least that him and Brandon Roy can play together. His importance to the team is, I think, incredibly important in that, you know, like we talked about in the last podcast, still looking for a point guard for this team for some time now. And it seems like Andre Miller is the caliber of player and of point guard who could be that guy if, you know, everything can fall into place. So, I mean, as far as future with the team goes, I have to think that Andre Miller is probably, you know, pretty legit, at least, like I said, for the next 3 years.
Yeah, lack of a jump shot bothers me. Lack of defense bothers me. And I don't know. I get the gut feeling that the Miller experiment could be short in Portland. I don't know that they'd be able to trade him now, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him on the block this summer, or keep in mind that third year is a team option, so that, you know, it doesn't have to be picked up, which means, in effect, I believe he has an expiring contract next year. I think Miller can be a good short-term fix, but I don't see Andre here for the long haul. I think there's just too much, I don't want to say conflict, but it's not a seamless fit with Roy, which is a huge criteria, and it just doesn't seem to be working. It's when Miller's scoring, other people are not scoring. Miller needs to score in order to be effective. Yes, he gets assists, but everything's kind of discombobulated right now, disconnected. Part of that's injury, but part of that's just that the chemistry just doesn't appear to be there.
Yeah, I was listening to the post game show last night on 95.5, and Wheels was talking, or excuse me, Antonio was talking to, I think whoever does radio for the Dallas Mavericks, and he was talking about Jason Kidd and saying that, you know, he thinks that it took, you know, that first year for Jason Kidd to become acclimated to his teammates and to kind of really figure out, you know, where they wanted the ball and how, you know, where guys are going to be at and how the offense runs. And you know, I was kind of thinking about it. Is that kind of the situation that we're in right now with Andre Miller? Is it going to be, you know, a full year before, you know, this team really realizes or knows what they have in Andre Miller and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, of course there's some of that, but no matter what, I mean, it's what you know you don't have in Miller. You don't have a jump shooter, you know, or someone who can you know, be reliable from 18 feet and out, which means if I'm the defense, I guard heavily on the inside because I'm worried about Brandon Roy's penetration. I'm worried about Greg Oden. I'm worried about LaMarcus Aldridge far more than I'm worried about Miller from deep. Also, the defense just isn't there. I mean, I've become used to it because we've watched, you know, multiple dozens of games of it now, but it really, he's not a good defender. And those are two things that the Blazers really need at the point guard position, and Miller just doesn't bring it.
Moving on down the list here, Jared Bayless, seeing a lot more of him the past couple games, being forced, well, not forced into, but, well, I guess force is the best word. Playing more because of injury, basically, not getting a whole lot of minutes before then, but kind of really showing, you know, what he can do when given a longer leash and allowed to make some mistakes. And, you know, the reports about Bayless that you hear is that, you know, teams are interested in trying to pick him up because they know he's not playing a lot of minutes when the team is healthy. And, you know, the Trailblazers are not really being interested in doing anything with Bayless other than keeping him on their team. So I think from that respect and the fact that, you know, he's still rookie scale and will be so for a couple of years, I think Jared Bayless's future with this team, at least for the next 2-3 years, are pretty solid. After that, it probably becomes an issue of what Jared wants to do. If Jared is fine with the role that by that time he will have assumed, whatever that role is, then I think Jared sticks around. If he's, you know, the kind of guy who's looking for something more and wants to, you know, be the starter on the team, if he's not the starter by the time, you know, his contract is up, then, I mean, I think Jared is the kind of guy who wants to play so much that he would consider, you know, moving somewhere else, depending on what that role entails. And obviously, you know, I mean, a trade doesn't necessarily, or signing with another team doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have any different role than you had before, but, you know, sometimes the grass is always greener. So when it comes to Jared, I think short term, meaning the next 2 years or so, pretty much a lock to be here. After that, I'd say it's probably more 75-25 in favor of staying.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of value he does have, and what, you know, if the Blazers were offered a legit, you know, starter, and I guess where you'd ask where they'd fit in, but I suppose at point guard, let's put it that way, you know, if you got a Devin Harris type, I'm not saying exactly him because he's shooting too high, but you know, that type of player where you were sure he was going to be your point guard for the next 4 or 5 years, and Bayless was part of that package, and with somebody else, I think that they'd throw him in no problem. But all other things being equal, I think they'll want to figure out what Jared can do. His exciting potential, I think, is defensively, just physically defensively. Also, he's starting to hit that jumper, which we've talked about ad nauseum now, and that makes him quite valuable. I think he needs to be no worse than the third guard on this team in order to stick around. So, you know, he has potential as a combo guard off the bench at either position, where there's not too much pressure to fulfill either one, but he just comes in, maybe gets 28, 30 minutes a game, backing up a couple people, and he's free to score. I think in that case, I could see Jared staying here easily, and he'd be quite an asset. If he has to play straight point guard, and if he's only dependent on, you know, doing the things that Brandon Roy leaves over, then I don't see a long future for him here, just because, as you point out, I don't think he'll want to be in that kind of role. I don't think we'd be taking full advantage of his gifts. And, you know, it's one of those tweener decisions right now, but thank goodness there's no hurry to make it.
Yeah, thank goodness for the rookie scale. You know, that really... That gives you quite a few years to figure out exactly what you're going to do with some of these younger guys, and obviously keep salaries down too, which is nice in a salary cap world. So moving on to the guy who really does, as you mentioned, for a few of these guys, kind of the linchpin for personnel moves for everyone else, at least in regards to all guards not named Brandon Roy, is Rudy Fernandez. His injury is kind of dropped him off the radar a little bit, but I mean, he's going to be back before too awful long, and you know, he's a player who brings you a lot of different skills that, you know, are really hard to duplicate. He's got some decent size, decent ball handler, can shoot the heck out of the ball, continues to improve on his ability to get points outside of his long range jumper. And, you know, is a guy who is active enough on and tricky enough on defense to you know, make teams stay honest. So when it comes to Rudy, I kind of view Rudy's situation as somewhat similar to Jared Bayless's. You know, a guy that you definitely want to keep around and who could, you know, in the future assume a much bigger role. And in the short term, I think, unless you get a really nice deal, you keep him on your team, you know, no matter what. But when time comes to make that decision on his second contract, is his role on the team going to be enough to make him want to stay on the team? And Rudy's another guy too, who, you know, he's playing for free right now, basically, because he wants to play at the highest level. And, you know, when you do that, you would, you know, like to play a lot of minutes. And I think before the injury, we were starting to see Rudy's minutes kind of tick up a little bit. And I think, you know, if he were available right now, you know, I think that it's legitimate to consider that he would probably be starting. But whether or not that actually does come to fruition and whether or not that happens will probably, you know, really kind of help Rudy make his decision on what he thinks his long-term future is in Portland. So right now, short-term, I would say basically 90% he'll be around for, you know, at least to the continuation of his current contract. Then after that, I'll put it at 80% stay, just because I know this team really likes Rudy Fernandez a lot. And, you know, I think he's a guy who they would really work and make concessions for to get him to stay. So I think more likely he's still here, but, you know, those minutes have to be there for him.
Yeah, the three-guard lineup has changed my view on Rudy a little bit as far as his suitability, because he does bring some of those skills that the other guards don't. And I think if you're going to toy around with Roy at, you know, playing some small forward or, you know, the third guard or whatever, I think there's plenty of room for Rudy on this team. And I think the ideal would be an eventual lineup of Roy and Fernandez and Batum starting at those, you know, wing positions. And who cares which one of them brings it up the court, just someone gets it up there and sets the offense. And I think that could be a fairly powerful combination there. You know, obviously we're not there yet, but, you know, like I say, if you're using Steve Blake in this kind of role, why couldn't you toy with Fernandez in it as well?
Yeah, I completely agree. Everything that pretty much Steve Bling brings to that lineup, Rudy brings, and you know, then some. So I think that, yeah, Rudy's a guy who, given health, will his role, I would say, would almost assuredly increase as the games and years go on. Jumping over to the small forwards here, we'll start out with the gimme, in my opinion, Nicholas Batum. I think Nicholas is probably as assured of a player on this team as there is outside of probably Brandon and LaMarcus, getting paid beans in regards to NBA salaries, super athletic, super young, really filled the role as a defensive stopper on this team last year. And I know that that's the goal they have for him in years going forward, and as well as, you know, an improving offensive player. I think Nicholas is a guy, and you know, I've said this for months now, that you know, is the future at small forward for the Portland Trail Blazers. And I think he's pretty much all but a lock to be here short and long term.
Yeah, no reason not to keep him. I mean, this, you know, again, unless someone makes an obnoxious trade offer, there's no way you get rid of Nicholas. There's no salary, no skill conflict. I mean, it's just, he fits. So, yeah, end of discussion. He's probably in Portland for a long time.
Then on to the next two, whose futures I would say are more murkier when it comes to the small forward position. Starting out with the healthy Martell Webster. Obviously, short term right now, he's here because, you know, he is improving, and if nothing else, he's the only guy who can actually play the position legitimately outside. Well, legitimately, I don't consider Brandon Roy a legitimate small forward, so I'll qualify that statement. Martell Webster's the only guy that can play small forward on this team. His future, he's recently signed, I think it was last year, he signed his, I think, a 4 or 5 year contract extension for not obscene amounts of money, so he's a good value, assuming that he can continue to shoot the ball better than he had earlier in the season, and also improve his defense and rebounding. And if Martell becomes that player who can give you some consistency, both in the starting lineup and off the bench, I think he becomes a guy that you keep around, at least for the next couple of years, at least for his contract, unless you know, there's a deal out there that you know, someone is itching to get him. I think that, you know, he's the kind of guy who kind of has a nice balance to Nicholas Batum in the starting lineup at small forward. Gives you more offense, better shooting, not the same caliber of defense, not the same caliber probably rebounding, especially on the offensive glass. But I mean, we've seen a little bit of that from Martell as his minutes have increased. So I would say I'll probably put him at long term, you know, I would say at least through this contract he's currently playing on, or short term, I guess that would be long term, I would say probably 75% stay.
Yeah. You know, it depends. He signed through 2012, guaranteed 2013, really. And I don't know. Here's my question. Are you going to make full use of him? Are you getting everything out of Martell you should be getting? He's probably not going to be the starting small forward once Batum gets established, just because Batum is better in certain aspects of the game and gives you more of a defensive punch, which the team really needs with Roy in the backcourt. Martell has the potential to really be an offensive force, but he needs to be set up in order to do that, and the Blazers aren't really viewing him being set up as a priority right now. So even though he's gotten better in a lot of aspects of the game, and Martell right now is probably as good of a player as he's ever been, better than he's ever been, it makes me itch when you got a guy who's not fulfilling his true potential. I'm not saying that, you know, he's a 20-point-a-game scorer, but I'm saying you could be getting a lot more out of Martell that you're not, because he's just kind of hanging around on the sideline and waiting to shoot threes.
Now the big one that people are probably itching to talk about, Travis Outlaw, one of my personal favorites, at least from a personal standpoint. I do like this game as well, but I know that there's debate when it comes to Travis. I would say that, you know, the fact that he's coming off this injury or in the midst of this foot injury kind of cements his place on this team, just from the standpoint that is a team going to come and make an offer to Travis that's better than what the Trailblazers would offer him, assuming that they do offer him some kind of deal. I know that Travis is well liked in the organization. I know that you know, for some of the things he does, it might drive Coach McMillan crazy that Nate really does like what he brings off the bench. Travis is a guy too who is not going to complain about coming off the bench, and he's obviously a great chemistry guy. So I mean before the injury, if Travis was playing healthy and playing the way that we're seeing him playing, I would be worried that Travis might not be on this team next year. But given the situation that he's in with that foot injury, it's going to pretty much keep him out for the entire season. I would say that the likelihood of him being on the team at least next year is pretty good. And, you know, as long as he didn't sign a 1 or 2 year deal, I would say that, you know, over the next 3 or 4 years, I think there's a decent possibility of Travis still being here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things to recommend him, and you're seeing right now how the team could really use extra scorers. I mean, but then again, this is the team with half of the roster gone, and if that happens on a regular basis, Travis isn't going to do you much good anyway. He's not enough on his own to make up that kind of difference. I feel more like this might kind of be the last straw, that they're going to be looking at, you know, signing him to a 3 or 4 year deal. He's going to obviously want more money than he has been getting. I'm not sure that he justifies that kind of money for this team with as many other people as you have on the roster that you need to get shots for. And I think, you know, somebody else is probably going to pay him more than the Blazers are going to want to. You know, it's been a good run for Travis in Portland. If he left at the end of this year, you'd have to say, okay, you know, it's fond remembrances. He did what he could. You wish him all the success somewhere else. I just get the feeling if he stays here, it's going to be too expensive. And, by the way, not enough shots. You need to give some of his bench role probably to Rudy Fernandez if he's going to stay. Or if you keep Jared Bayless, then he needs to get some of those shots too. And I understand that they are not front court players like Travis is, but if you have a semi-cranky LaMarcus, how much role are you going to have for Travis in the first place? So there are a lot of things that make me think, as much as the organization might like him, as much as his scoring and his ability to create his own shot is valuable, that they just are going to go somewhere else for those things and let Travis go.
Yeah, you know, and you could be right, Dave. It might be a situation like we have with Channing Frye, you know, that, you know, they really liked him and really would have liked to keep him around, but excuse me, really just no real place for that kind of player and those kind of skill sets. So, you know, I think that, you know, you bring up some very valid points, and you know, it's a tough one to figure out, I think. And you know, if you were
going, the top shot is the Blazers are going to have to choose. I mean, you can't assume that Bayless and Fernandez and Outlaw and Webster and Odin are all going to reach their full potential on a team that features Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge as well. I mean, there's just not enough shots on one team and enough touches on one team for that to happen. And I know that you need depth, but you're still talking about players that aren't going to be used to their own satisfaction, let alone in a way that maximizes their effectiveness on the court. And you can get some of that effectiveness for a cheaper price and have it more targeted by having actually a legitimate, say, ninth man on the team instead of Rudy Fernandez or Travis Outlaw or Jared Bayless being the ninth man on the team, assuming that those guys all develop fairly well.
Do you think that this season and having all these injuries, do you think it maybe makes a team rethink the way they look at how they're going to keep this roster? I know obviously we're in the midst of, you know, one of the craziest injury bug attacks that has ever been, but I mean, you know, before people were saying the same things about, you know, needing to clear up space and clear up shots, and now that's really not an issue. Do you think that this season at all might kind of change the way that the team looks at those issues?
You can't game plan for this.
Yeah.
If this happens again, you're dead no matter what. So you can't build your roster based on preventing this from happening. You're just not going to succeed. You have to make the decisions as if people were going to be reasonably healthy. You have some reasonable depth. But it's not even a matter of depth. It's a matter of having sixth men as your tenth man does not work for anybody. You don't get, frankly, let's put it this way. The reason you think he's a sixth man or that talented is probably because of his scoring. And there's just not room enough for everybody to be that sixth-man scorer when you have five of them on the bench. You have to get, as I say, your legitimate guy who will be able to come in, rebound, defend, give you a few minutes in that ninth or tenth man role, probably be the savvy veteran who pulls out a game or two just because he's so smart and works so hard every time he comes in, but he gives you 10 minutes a game, and that's what he gives his full effort into. You're not missing out on anything. No one's disappointed. That's his job.
Couldn't have put it better myself, Dave. So kind of going down the list here, those are really all the tough ones to get to if I haven't missed any. Finishing off here, Juwan Howard. Juwan's obviously on a 1 year. I think if Juwan wants to stick around, he'll probably be welcome to. Pretty much it depends probably at this point how much money he wants and if he wants to keep playing. This will be this is Juwan Howard's 16th year. I mean, he still seems like he's fit enough to keep playing. So if he wants to go for a 17th, you know, that's a possibility. But you know, he's one of those guys who, you know, no one's probably going to swoop in and make an offer for him. But it's really his choice, I would imagine.
Yeah, and you know, Juwan, here's one of these guys that exactly what you're talking about or what I'm talking about. He comes into the year buried on the depth chart, might not even play. But he's been in the league 16 years. He used to be a star. And now all of a sudden catastrophe happens and he comes in and he gives you 10 points, 10 rebounds, and hits some jump shots. He's not a good defender at this point, but at least he knows where to be on the floor, and he knows how and when to take that jumper, and he's not obstructing anyone else when he comes in. He's a great bench player right now. This is the kind of guy you need. You keep six or seven core people, and you cycle around some of the other ones depending on you know, your situation that year, what you think you might need, and who's available. You're getting really good value out of what you paid for Juwan Howard right now in a way that you're not, for instance, or wouldn't be for a Jared Bayless if he was on his next contract.
Moving down the list here, getting to the rookies, Dante Cunningham. I know the team likes Dante a lot. You know, making pretty much the minimum, I believe. I think long term, it's hard to say just because you never know how he's going to develop. But I think that, you know, we've seen enough out of Dante at this point to assume that he's probably going to be around for another year or two, assuming he's not a, an add-on in a trade. Like I said, long-term, though, it's, you know, with these guys, it's really impossible to tell. If they come out and play decent, you know, maybe next couple of years at a good price, they're still around. If not, you know, maybe they're on another team, or they're finding their way in the DL or over in Europe. So Dante, Jeff Pendergraf, and Patty Mills, all kind of the same boat. I would say that to kind of guess about any of their long-term futures with the team is pretty futile. I would say with Jeff Pendergraf, though, I mean, when, you know, they could have cut him because of injury and you know, picked up someone else, they didn't. So that at least tells you they have some belief in what he can achieve. So I would say from that standpoint, you know, maybe a little extra benefit for him to stick around, or for the team wanting to keep him around. But with all three of those guys, it's really hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell right now. And with guys like this, you have to be kind of mercenary. I mean, and a good GM will be. Of course, you love them. You drafted some of them. I mean, you see something in them. But you don't fall in love with everybody you draft. You understand that turnover is high in this business, and it's very competitive. And you get the 10th, 11th, 12th, 15th guy that you need, and you don't feel sad when they pass by, because there's another guy that you'll need right around the corner. You know, if you lose Brandon Roy, that's a big deal. You lose Dante Cunningham, as much as I like the guy, that's part of the game.
That's true. It is a meat grinder, you know, so they do come and go. So,
Otherwise, Jeff Lamp would still be on this team.
Yeah, exactly. John Crotty wouldn't be. Is John Crotty still playing?
I doubt it.
You doubt it. Okay. Maybe he is, maybe. I don't know. John Crotty's always, I don't know why, but that name always sticks in my head. I don't know why that is, but John Crotty, if you're out there listening, send me an email. Anyways, kind of wrapping up here, one more game to go on this road trip before the team comes back and plays, I believe, 9 of 10 at home. Obviously, this road trip already has been incredibly successful, no worse than going 2-2, which, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I'm thinking that's probably going to happen. Last night's game, obviously, like you had mentioned earlier, you get that emotional lift after a player goes down, but with Brandon Roy's status kind of up in the air, and, you know, with the team coming off a big win in the last game of a road trip without Joel Prisbilla, seems like it's going to be an ultra uphill battle to get this one. But coming back 2-2, like I said, and like you said last week, Dave, would be a, you know, phenomenal trip. And so coming back and going to this next stretch of the schedule against some really tough teams, but at home, really, as I said last week, and it's even more true now, going to find out if this team has enough to make the playoffs. And you know, this next 10-game stretch, I think, will show us, especially since it's at home, just what the likelihood of a postseason run this year will be.
Yeah, and it's not only the emotional lift that you get, it's the fact that Dallas wasn't prepared. I mean, Dallas wasn't prepared to play that game last night, period. You could tell it in the first quarter. They came out assuming that they were going to win it. And the Prisbilla injury seemed to confirm that in them. I guess they thought it was going to get easier, and the Blazers just took them. However, you saw in that third period that coming out of the locker room, once they'd been reminded and scolded, they did take advantage of the Blazers pretty handily, especially on the interior with posting and driving both. Now, San Antonio has had 24 hours to think about this, and in their shoot-around today, they drew big red lines pointing toward the lane. They circled Tim Duncan or whoever else is going to post up down there, and they know exactly what's coming and exactly where to hit the Blazers. You know, it's going to be a different story from here on out. The Blazers will have to come with that same amount of energy in this game and in every game, and I'll be curious to see how they compensate for just now an utter void of interior defense.
Yeah, it's there's nothing left there in the interior. So all those perimeter guys, those wings, you start playing a lot better defense, because there's no backup anymore. Once you get to that front line, you're basically playing against wing defenders. So everyone's got to step up.
You know what you do now. I mean, and I'm not bagging on LaMarcus, because LaMarcus, I think, has put a lot of effort into his defense overall. I mean, it varies from game to game, and certainly his effectiveness varies. But he's not really dogging it out there. That said, if I am the opposing team, one of my number one priorities is to get a couple fouls on LaMarcus, because then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you just the cupboard's empty. Juwan Howard in there, I suppose. Dante Cunningham, Jeff Pendergraft. You will make hay in there if you can get two fouls on LaMarcus early. So the perimeter defenders, as you say, have to be ready for that and have to understand that their men are going to be driving, and LaMarcus cannot afford to pick up fouls trying to stop them. At this point, I think you consider putting LaMarcus on whoever the weaker scorer is on the opposing team to protect him. The on paper matchup is LaMarcus against Duncan tonight. I don't know how much of that I run early. I might wait and let him defend Duncan in the second half once we've gotten through the first half without too much foul trouble. I mean, you have to think about all these things now that you just took for granted before, and this is quite the puzzle to solve, how the Blazers are going to pull out some of these wins. That said, I do believe that this home stretch is going to come at a good time for him, even with a tough opponent. The emotion should be there. It's hard to envision them completely falling apart as long as the crowd is cheering for them. So I think we're going to be okay. Certainly this road trip has been fantastic, beyond my dreams. We're okay for now. It's just we're right on the edge, if not over it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's allowable or if it counts as two players if Patty Mills, you know, gets on Jeff Pendergraft's back and they perform as one person, which, you know, Patty's pretty fast, and, you know, Jeff's got broad shoulders, so they might be able to swing something like that. But my fear tonight is that Tony Parker's going to score like 60 points with no one in the paint defending him. So
yeah,
fingers crossed on that one, folks.
Yeah, and here's the thing is you want the Blazers to run, but running, you know, takes a lot of energy. And hard to do for 48 minutes. This is a team that's not used to running. I mean, you see them push tempo. And by the way, the Blazers should always get the ball up the court as quickly as they can. I hate to see them walk. But frankly, that's what they do a lot of times, even if they start out with the intention to push. They usually end up walking it up for multiple possessions per quarter. How are you going to run if, A, you can't rebound, B, you're having trouble defending, and C, you're just playing fatigue because you got to play the same players for 42 minutes a game now.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, I agree. If you don't even have to push the ball, but just get it across the half-court line faster so you at least have a few more seconds to deal with that shot clock. I mean, shooting late in the shot clock is still a big problem for us. Even if you're just running it to the half court and then stopping, I mean, at least do that. Give yourself another 2 seconds rather than walking up court. You don't really get anything from walking up court that you wouldn't get from just running it up and then starting the offense from there. So
except for rest,
yeah.
I think that's at least part of it with Brandon right now. But the thing is, now it's not just going to be Brandon. It's going to be a lot of people. This roster is stretched so thin that everybody's going to be, you know, tired, except maybe the point guards. Guess we still have three of them. We may just end up playing all three at once and calling it good. I mean, who knows? But it's certainly, you have a whole new set of problems to think of now, because you just took out the heart of this team, really, the foundation of this team is now gone. And you're left, it's like being left in a plane where both gunners are still there, both turrets are still there in LaMarcus and Brandon, but you don't have an engine.
Yeah.
Have fun shooting on your way down, but you better find a way to get some power underneath those wings too. Otherwise, it's going to be a real short trip.
That's right. We're going down, but we're taking everyone else with us. So that's the way to do it. Well, that's going to probably wrap it up for today. We're at 60 minutes right now, which is an hour for those of you out there. So we're going to do it there. Obviously, we'll be back next week after the Christmas holiday. In the interim, Dave, what do you got going on the Blazers' Edge?
Well, a lot of digging up possibilities for coping. Right now, we are just blitzed with these games, like we talked about last week, and we got one on Christmas, so we're going to turn around and have another one. But we'll probably, like I said, we'll do a decade review and a few other things. Of course, Ben's on top of all the latest news and the injury reports and all of that. So you can always tune in for your latest news at Blazers Edge. And we'll just all get through this together. Right now, it's like I feel like armchair psychologist a little bit trying to, you know, grief counselor would be a better way to put it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're all stunned, and I'm sure we'll come out of it. The thing is, in 3 weeks, everybody will have forgotten that this even happened in terms of the emotional impact, and I'll be back to, you know, expecting to win games again. It's just a matter of how well the Blazers will be able to fill that bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for myself, Casey Holdall, TurboBlazers.com, Dave Deckert, BlazersEdge.com. I know we both wish you all a happy holiday, regardless of what holiday it is that you actually celebrate. And we appreciate you listening to the TurboBlazers.com podcast. Still looking for a new name, though, so I'll have to figure that out maybe in the new year. Maybe that'll be my resolution, new name for the podcast.
The right. Patella Club?
Patella Club, there you go, yeah, the injury-free Patella Club.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, Dave. Well, that'll do it for us. Everyone out there, take care. Have a happy holiday.